Hey, I tell you what I'm gonna give you, Snakes. I'm gonna give you, to the count of 10, to get your ugly, yellow, no good keister off my property before I pump your guts full of lead.
All right, Johnny, I'm sorry. I'm going.
1, 2, 10. Keep the change, you filthy animal.
An 8-year-old troublemaker mistakenly left behind as his family flies overseas must defend his home against a pair of burglars over the holiday season. Ladies and gentlemen, that's right. Tonight we will be talking about Terminator 2, starring Edward Furlong as the 8-year-old troublemaker mistakenly left behind as his mother is overseas in some sort of house that I believe Freight Train also sent Lugene once upon a time. And he must defend his home against a pair of burglars played by Arnold Schwarzenegger and Robert Patrick.
It's all toilet sound.
It's the classic holiday film called Jingle All the Way. Hey, welcome to the theater, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Shannon Young. I'm going to be your host tonight. And with me, of course, we
Well, he made it through the intro before he broke this time.
He couldn't even handle it. It was the that sent it over. That was deep done.
Hey, Double H is with us tonight.
And you're scared of the dark too, Shannon.
It's true. And so is Unknown Henson. And that's why he got fired from Squidbillies.
Oh, my God.
Also with us tonight. What a day. By the way, as we talk about, we're actually talking about Home Alone. We're not talking about Troublemaker 2 or Terminator 2.
Troublemaker, okay. Well.
Here tonight to talk about Terminator 2. Damn it. Home Alone. God.
Home Alone.
Which is
tell me you didn't watch the movie without telling me you didn't watch the movie.
Our second.
I didn't watch the movie because I worked open to close today, and I didn't register in my head yesterday that I could have watched it while he was watching Terminator.
I did watch Terminator, to be fair. With us tonight to discuss Home Alone is going to be Lindsay Wolfgang.
Oh, hi. I'm here.
This is your second episode of whatever this one's called, Extras and Epilogues for the Week. And technically, if you want to get technical, it's actually the third episode of Extras and Epilogues this week because I posted Tombstone on Sunday. So you're getting four episodes of Extras and Epilogues this week, ladies and gentlemen.
You get real lucky. You might get four of them.
Billy Hills and I are going to be discussing Godzilla Minus One later this week, Lindsay. Get the cheesecake out of your mouth for 5 seconds. And
it's not a cheesecake. It's an ice cube.
So tonight we're talking about Home Alone. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in. Of course, this is our favorite show to do, Extras and Epilogues, where we get to talk about films. We have an actual topic that we can talk about, and even though we deviate from it occasionally, we come back to the film. It's much easier to handle than a Thursday show where there's five topics, and I want to know Jesse's thoughts on all of them so we can win.
Chaos.
Released November 16th, 1990. This is probably, if you're in the same age range as us, this is probably the Christmas movie you remember more than most. It was directed by John Hughes and Chris Columbus, writer, director.
Chris Columbus directed it, and this was his launching pad. He was actually offered Christmas Vacation, which we're covering next week, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Yeah. It was not quite his speed. It was a little too intense for him. He talked to Hughes and some other screenwriters about something else he could work on, and it was John Hughes who offered and the studio that offered this one up. And he said, that's much more my thing. So Chris Columbus then goes on to direct some of the Harry Potter movies, if I remember correctly.
Sure.
It very much ends up being more his speed, these kinds of sort of upbeat action comedy type movies in a way. And then John Hughes, I mean, I'm going to let Lindsay talk about this, but yeah, right. John Hughes.
I did not know that he was behind this film for the longest time. Like, I literally think I only realized this like 2 years ago, but like, I love all the John Hughes movies. Like, Breakfast Club is still one of my favorite films. Like, all of those, like, 80 teens brat pack movies.
So did Silent Bob. Got them in trouble.
It's true. John Hughes, his writing for this movie literally makes it, because while we're not quite getting into the meat and potatoes of the movie itself just yet, this is such an easy premise to fumble. It would be so easy for this to be very bad, right? It's a seriously unrealistic premise. It's totally goofy. And that comes about later on when he's no longer writing these. By the time you get to the third one, because for some ungodly reason, there's a third one and beyond, they get stupid. Because there's only so many times you can do this correctly. Even the second one was pushing it, but because you still had John Hughes writing it, it works.
And Macaulay Culkin.
And Macaulay Culkin, obviously. Chris Columbus said specifically, you know, every time that I thought this is never going to work, no one's going to buy this, John Hughes would come in and plug the hole. He would come in and fix the thing that I thought there's no way anyone's going to buy this, and it worked. So they're a hell of a team for this.
Yeah.
Once you know who's behind it, it makes sense.
And that's good too, because like you said, this movie is a very easy one to hate. And I personally have a love-hate relationship with this film, because I loved it growing up. I really did. It was a classic. It was in my household all the time. I was around 8 years old when this thing came out. So, you know, I wasn't. When was this movie made? Yes, I was. Hell, okay.
90.
Yeah, so.
You were 8, yeah, because I was 5.
Yeah, Macaulay Culkin and I were the same age, according to the film. And so
he was 9 when they filmed it, and then 10 when it came out. But he's 8 in the movie.
The old bastard, older than me.
Salty.
Everyone wanted to be him in this film, because how much fun would that be to, you know, fight off these two bumbling intruders? And, you know, it looked like fun. He's creating all these hijinks and all these things. Of course, in real life, two adult intruders breaking into a home where a 8-year-old lived by himself because his parents forgot him. It's just a nightmare. It's just a logistics nightmare. Yes. It would not
this
be
is
good.
Horrifying.
It would not be as much fun. So before we talk about the film, I want to talk about a little short that Macaulay Culkin filmed years after the fact.
Yeah.
Where
there were several. He's done a few of these. He's done advertisements that reference this. But he also, I think I know what you're talking about, where he kind of did almost like a follow-up.
Yes.
To this movie.
Where he was an Uber driver, and he ends up kidnapping his passenger and torturing him, basically. Yeah. And, oh no, they're torturing someone that tried to break in, if I remember correctly.
Right.
Yeah. It's real dark, and he talks about all the psychological effects he suffered, the character of, what was his name? Kevin McAllister. Yeah.
Yeah.
How much he suffered because of what happened. Not only did his parents leave him alone, they left him alone twice to fight these same fucking bandits. And this also, you run into that problem of, like you said, how many times could the same thing happen to the same character in the same way? It was like Die Hard. How many times could John McClane be caught up in something weird like this? How many times could Kevin McAllister be left alone somewhere and still fight Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern?
So to be fair, we're not talking about the second movie in depth tonight. That's
not focused
on the first one. But because, again, it's John Hughes, they make the second one work in the sense that it's not the exact same premise. Home Alone is now a moniker because he gets mixed
He's
up
in a hotel.
The airport and goes the wrong direction.
Right.
I think the most unrealistic thing about the second one, you know, outside of, again, some of the basic logistics, is that he and Harry and Marv end up in the same place. There's no reason for Harry and Marv to be in New York.
That's the
right to go from Chicago to there. That's the part that makes no sense. And frankly, it would have made more sense to give him a second, you know, a new set of villains to deal with. But it's Joe Pesci. If Joe Pesci wants to come back and do the movie, you're not going to tell him no.
And Daniel
he didn't
Stern.
Die in the first one, so he's going to come back. And I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong, not to put Daniel Stern down, but Joe Pesci's the name that goes along with that. And they were both such a big deal for that first movie that when they went, we want you guys back, and they wanted to be back, well, that's it. There's not going to be any argument. We'll just find a way. Even if it's just, we just happen to also now be in New York.
The second one stuck out in my mind a little bit more, but that's because I was excited because I got to go see it in theaters when it came out, and I didn't get to go to the movies a lot when I was a kid. Like, we went to, like, whatever Disney movie came out that year, and that was about it. But I remember Mom and I going to see Home Alone 2 because I happened to win tickets in a drawing. We had it at school. They were just theater tickets that you could use for whatever, so we went and saw that Christmas season.
I liked the second one more. I have more fond memories of the second one, but we'll talk about the first one here. But
wow, that's surprising.
I have to mention this. I didn't know this. I'm looking through the franchise now because I knew they made a sequel, Home Alone 3. Apparently, they made.
There's been more than that.
There's six of them.
Oh, yeah. They were like direct to videos, and they all look awful.
Well, but
I have never watched any of them past two.
I've seen the third one once. It's terrible. The only thing notable now about it is that it's one of Scarlett Johansson's first, like, quote unquote, big roles. And she's basically a teenager in the movie. She's like super, super young. But it's not good. A good movie.
Here's the one that bothers me because I didn't know this was a thing. I didn't know this one existed. Home Alone 4, Taking Back the House, right? Listen to the storyline. It tells the story of Kevin McAllister, who goes to spend his Christmas with his father and his new girlfriend as his old enemy Marv and his wife Vera come with a plan to kidnap a visiting prince with help from an inside person that Kevin least suspects. This one...
What?
And it stars French Stewart as Marv.
Oh.
And Missy Pyle as his wife Vera.
I hear the first act is not great, but Shannon in Double Jeopardy, he's gonna bloom.
So the plot of this movie is the father is divorcing his wife, who's played by Catherine O'Hara in the original, and the hijinks and all the characters are in it. Kate, Buzz, Megan, none of them played by who they should be played as, obviously.
Of course. Yeah, no.
At least the other Home Alones had the decency to not focus on Kevin McAllister. There were new characters.
Right.
The ball's on you to try to replace Macaulay Culkin as Kevin McAllister.
Right.
That kid got fucked.
Yeah, so before we get, you know, as we're working down the line here, because the cast is great. We already talked about Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern in general. Catherine O'Hara, as we talked about in Beetlejuice, is one of my favorite. I now recognize, now that I'm older, that she's one of my, she's one of my favorite actresses from that era. Had no idea how much of an impact that she'd had, but she's in so much stuff and she's great in everything. If you've never, and I don't think you guys have, because I'm more of a sitcom person, I think, than a lot of our friends group. Schitt's Creek, the show that was just like all over the place a couple of years ago. She plays the mother of the main family in that one too. This was just, you know, in the past 5 or 6 years. Incredible. She's a huge standout in that cast too. But Macaulay Culkin, okay, you and I were just talking about this with Terminator. We were joking out about it at the beginning of this. Part of the reason that you and I both agreed that we like the original Terminator more than T2, which is also kind of a hot take, it's partly because of Edward Furlong. It's not like he does a bad job, but he's just an annoying kid actor.
Yep.
To me, there is, and I'm sure I'm going to say it and then remember somebody and go, well, but them too. Macaulay Culkin is the epitome of a great fucking kid actor.
Yes.
Top of the crop.
Oh,
that's part of the problem. I do not watch this movie annoyed by him. I do not watch this movie wanting to see like somebody else doing other things. I mean, I didn't put it in the notes in the listing for the trivia, but one of the things that came up was that apparently in a lot of the test screenings, one of the main things they changed coming out of those and into the regular film or to the existing film is that they cut out scenes of the family in France because test audiences' responses were, what's Kevin doing? Like, we don't give a shit about him.
That's
what's
the focus
Kevin
of
doing?
The movie.
Get back to Kevin.
Absolutely.
Right. And he's good. You want to watch him. You want to see what he's doing.
My only problem,
he acts like a kid that age. He has his like bratty moments, but they're not like awful.
Yeah.
As far as that goes. And
they are, but appropriately to me, like he's a brat at the beginning of the movie, but in a way that makes you go, I get it. That, like, he's getting screwed over constantly, and the way he reacts is, I mean, as an adult, you look at it and go, yeah, that's what an 8-year-old would do.
Right.
He would tell his mom that he wishes he never saw her again. He would, you know, throw a fit in front of his family. He would punch his brother. That's what an 8-year-old kid would do. And then when he gets left alone, what does he do? Well, he goes apeshit. Of course he does.
Yeah, I didn't hate Macaulay Culkin in this, but I was a big Macaulay Culkin fan. Again, I grew up, you know, in this time period, I was 8 years old. So no kids irritated me because I was a kid and I was like, okay, he's really good. He doesn't come across as annoying. He can be annoying. And as an adult, I think the only thing I truly disliked about this film was the ineptitude of Marv and Harry, just because like there's dumb and then there's freight train dumb. There's Lou Jean.
Well, yeah,
dumb.
I mean, at a certain point, and again, now we're delving into the movie itself. At a certain point, the movie goes from, you know, scenes of the two like sides trying to figure out what the next one is going to do. When it comes time for them to actually kind of assault the house and try to get
full on slapstick.
If you can't picture it as a Looney Tunes cartoon then you're never going to get into it.
Right.
For whatever reason, probably because I saw it as a kid, and I'm only 3 years younger than you guys, but it's enough of a difference. It's like, you know, I'm 2 years older than Sarah, and sometimes I'm like, oh, that means nothing. Like, you know, there's really no difference there. But there are also times that I'll reference something and I get that blank stare and I go, oh shit, that's the divide. It's just that one little 2 year divide that makes the difference. I don't know, man. I grew up with this as a movie where I saw the whole thing kind of that way, and it just has never bumped me. I mean, Christmas Vacation is kind of like that. You've seen Christmas Vacation, right?
A long time ago, but yes. Yeah.
Okay. It's got a little bit of that too. It's not too much, but there are a few scenes that are a little slapsticky, and it just, you know, it's coming, and you're, it's funny, so you just go with it.
This was the third highest grossing film of the year in 1990.
It was the number one domestic, if I remember correctly, and Ghost and something else beat it worldwide.
Well, see, no, I think it's the opposite because I thought the same thing, but I don't understand, because I'm looking on the Wikipedia for it. It says highest calendar gross films of 90 in the United States. Then it says Ghost, Pretty Woman, then Home Alone. But then below that, it says highest grossing films of 1990 by in-year release, Home Alone, Ghost, Danceable. So I think is maybe Ghost came out in 89 and it bled over, potentially, or it started in 90 and bled over.
And also, this came out in November and then would have bled over into the next year.
Yeah, so there had to be something funky about it. It came out November
16th. It's pretty late. But yeah, pretty late in the year there.
Listen to this lineup for that year in the top 10 films. Just I have a point to this, I promise.
This is 1990?
So, Back to the Future Part 3. That was, according to this list, number 10. Number 9, Dick Tracy, which is a really underappreciated gem. Like, I know it's not perfect, but I loved that movie.
It's been so long.
That was Warren Beatty's, like, baby there. That was his project, man. Driving Miss Daisy, Die Hard 2, right there. Total Recall. Ooh, that's a hot one. The Hunt for Red October, which is another really good one that I need to rewatch again.
Right.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came right behind Home Alone. That shows you how good of a year that was. Home Alone, Pretty Woman, which is like the, you know, the epitome of the romantic comedy, and Ghost, which is, I haven't watched it in years, but I loved it as a child. Very sad. But the point is that what a fantastic year for films. And then what upsets me, this movie did not make the top 10, but Macaulay Culkin got a Golden Globe nomination for Best Actor, right? Do you know who he lost it to?
In that year, is it from those movies you mentioned?
No. Nope. Not that movie. Nope.
Oh, okay. I don't know. If it's not from any of those movies you mentioned, I don't know.
The best way I can describe this actor, I referred to him once as LeChonk, because he's a French pig.
Oh, Gerard Depardieu.
Gerard Depardieu in Green Card. Beat Macaulay Culkin. Come on. Freaking gross. Frog. The racist, the French people for some reason. I don't know why. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Macaulay Culkin, like I said, there really isn't enough. There aren't enough good things to say about him. Joe Pesci loved working with him. Joe Pesci famously was like, you know, he called him Mac, which I think is great. I can hear it. I can literally hear him saying it. But he's like, we don't even think of him as a kid on set. He's like an old man, you know. He knows what he's doing. He's got the lines. He's got the stuff memorized. And when he says that they didn't think of him as a kid, that worried me, because you know how kid actors ended. Get dealt with in Hollywood. But at the same time, he said, you know, specifically, like, he had a birthday party on the set. Or, like, if he was tired, literally, Macaulay would just, like, lay down. He'd just find a place to lay down, take a nap, and he's like, you know, wake me up when you're ready. You know, and he'd just go to sleep.
He didn't go to the Drew Barrymore school and do cocaine in between sets.
I think if I remember correctly, they said he could only work, you know, because the labor laws at the time, he could only work 5 hours at a time. So they would do a lot of his stuff at the same time, or they would do a lot of his solo scenes all in one go. I don't know. I watched this movie and I go, man, that's a 9-year-old kid putting on a fucking masterclass of how to act at that age.
Yeah, it's almost like a solo show. Like, there's other actors, obviously, but this is, it's kind of like Will Smith in I Am Legend. I mean, this is a Macaulay Culkin movie. This is what.
Yeah. And
I was
just going to say, you get a lot of that in TV, but not in movies.
Right.
Like, that never happens in movies. There are a lot of TV shows that are built around... Ben Savage is the whole reason that Boy Meets World exists. Blossom. The show was called The Untitled Ben Savage Project. Yeah, yeah. Maya Bialik. The shows are built around the kid, and then you just make it work. That doesn't happen in movies as often, especially not now.
Yeah, especially a movie like this. I think this was Macaulay Culkin. I mean, this was his big first role, right? Did he have anything before this?
It was Uncle Buck.
Yeah, he was an Uncle Buck.
So the reason that they ended up settling on him, and the reason he even mainly got a test screening for this movie was because of that scene in Uncle Buck where he interrogates John Candy through the mail slot.
Yeah.
As being his sort of babysitter. I forget if it was John Hughes or Chris Columbus who had seen that and said, we got to test this kid for it. They were reasonably certain they wanted him. They tested like a couple hundred kids and they just kept coming back to him every time. And they were like, we knew pretty much from the moment we had him that he was going to be the right one for the role. So Uncle Buck was kind of the breakout, I think, for him. And of course, then it was this and The Good Son and My Girl and all those other things.
Girl. Oh my God.
Shannon, he can't see with those glasses,
Hunter.
Oh fuck.
That one still gets me. That one broke me as a kid.
Yeah.
I still cry when I watch that movie, but it's so good.
Yeah. And this movie is too. I said I have more fond memories of the second one. I think that's because I like the other actors in the second one more. Tim Curry's in it, famously. And I love Tim Curry. Sure. And I was a huge fan of him in that. It has that famous scene with the, your filthy animals and all that good stuff, or dirty animals. I forget exactly how it's said. It's been a while.
That's in this one, too.
Was this in both of them?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dude,
this is the first one to do that. He doesn't. Okay. So, okay.
Now's the time of the show when Shannon admits that he hasn't watched this film in probably 15 years. And he was hoping that he could just remember enough about it to fake his way through the show. Really hoping that Lindsay would have picked up his slack.
The flip.
Shit, since last Christmas. I'm sorry.
The flip side of that is we watch this movie every year at Christmas, at least once. And I think I told you guys, but I haven't mentioned on the show, this Saturday we're going to see the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra perform the score to it and watch it as we do.
I remember when we were supposed to see it last year.
Yeah, so we were supposed to see it last year, and it got that was that crazy ice storm that came through in late December, and it wrecked it all. So we're going this year, and we're going this weekend. But what were you talking about, Lee? Oh, yeah, so the movies. One of the first things they filmed for the whole thing was the fake movie that Kevin watches, Angels with Filthy Souls, which, of course, is Angels with Dirty Faces is the fake one. It's about Angels with Filthy Souls. Not a real movie. Every kid around that era just assumed it was, right? We all thought that was a real movie.
I thought it was an old film.
The sets in that movie, cardboard. In the fake movie, because they went as low budget as they possibly could.
That's
this was
awesome.
Back when nobody thought this movie was going to do well. It was at the same time that Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern had agreed, we're going to just ham it up. This is not going to do well, so we're going to overact and chew up the scenery.
And they did.
And that ended up being the right choice.
Yeah.
But it ended up being the right choice.
Yeah.
So the fake movie in the first film, Angels with Filthy Souls, is not Christmas referenced at all. It has nothing to do with Christmas. It's only in the second one when he watches Angels with Even Filthier Souls. Great title. Where they reference Christmas and New Year and all that. That's the one people remember because of the different names. You've been smooching on everybody.
Yes.
Little mole with the gimpy leg.
God.
I could go on forever, baby.
I think that's also, you're going to hate this, but... That's also the name of a song by Hawthorne Heights, is Angels with Even Filthier Souls. And I wonder if I can only assume they took that from this. Yeah.
They 100% took it from that.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like they took their sound from the dumpster. Anyway.
Hey, you back up. Angels and Airwaves. I said what I said. Oh, fuck. I didn't even run through the rest of the stats. We got to talking about everything.
That's fine. That's fine.
103-minute runtime. That's the sweet spot. That's right in that sweet spot.
Yep. Yeah.
We've said this a million times.
It's not quite 2 hours. It's not quite too close to the hour and a half limit. It's perfect.
Yep.
Budget versus box office. You're talking about an $18 million budget versus a $476 million box office. A bona fide hit.
It was at one point in time, and I'm certain it's not now. I don't know when it lost the record. It was the highest grossing comedy of all time for a fairly significant period of time. I think now technically Deadpool is, because the big deal about Deadpool was it was the highest rated
R-rated
comedy. Yeah. but it's still a comedy, so
yeah. Yeah, someone laughed at it probably. So critical reception, I'm sure. 65% approval. I don't hate Deadpool. It's fine.
I don't either.
It's just not my favorite. I have issues. 65% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. That's a 5.9 out of 10, surprisingly. Yep. 63 out of 100 on Metacritic, generally favorable, and an A rating on CinemaScore. I again think that this is one of those things that the difference between what pleases an audience and pleases a critic is always so different, because right. audiences are generally easier to please because they just want to watch a good movie and have fun, and that's what this right. film is. Critics have to pick everything apart like goddamn scientists. We can be accused of that sometimes. I don't know if you listened to our Tombstone episode, but we had an in-depth discussion right. about the amount of spitting. So that was a true. Real conversation.
We talked a
that happened.
Lot about the spitting.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the Rotten Tomatoes bit is when I put the approval rating there, that's the critic approval rating. And again, it's a positive one. It's just a lot of them giving it, you know, threes or fours out of fives, or like seven or eights, and basically saying, yeah, it's good. It's a family film. It's not breaking any ground. A lot of critics, when you're talking about like a 5 or a 10 point scale, will give, you know, threes or fours or seven or eights, basically on the basis of this is a really good movie. It just doesn't do anything new. There are other movies that do things like this.
Right.
Right. Which is for them kind of what this was. Now, to me, patently, that's a ridiculous statement, because this was not a movie that anything
I'd never
like
seen
it had
before.
Existed prior to
no.
this. Right. And this is a wholly original script, a totally original concept.
I seem to remember there being a little bit of controversy over the amount of violence in the film. In regard to children doing it. And as a kid, I didn't get it. I was like, no, this is awesome. This kid's beating up these two idiots. And now as an adult, I could look back on it and go, it's still good. And it's still this kid beating up on these right. two idiots. What's the problem here, people?
It's the copycat children that are stupid.
That were swinging paint cans over their banisters on Christmas morning at people and knocking them silly.
That were heating up doorknobs and releasing the tarantulas. Which, by the way, tarantulas, perfectly safe pet. Like, I remember being terrified of tarantulas after this movie.
Right. It.
But it's one of the most fragile and docile spiders in the world. Yes. You could blow on it and it'll die. So the fact that
that's why they were able to use a real one, or at least a couple of real ones in this movie, because you could just put them on people and they'll just be like, all right, now I'm here.
I'll just walk a little bit. Yeah.
Right, I'm just going to go over here. And it's going to be scary because I got a lot of limbs and they don't move at the same time.
And look how furry I am.
I'm very fuzzy.
Yeah.
Look how fuzzy I am. Right. Yeah, I'm very fuzzy. The tarantula's name is Axel, according to the novelization. I don't know why that's so important, but apparently it is. It's not in the movie.
Yeah, I don't understand why that is a point of interest there. Like, cool, it's a tarantula. It's a tarantula. I would have called him spider.
I put that on there to talk about their but spelled with a Y.
Because you were hip.
Right.
If I could have got away with putting a Z instead and been spider, I would have.
Spider. Oh, shit.
What about their jobs now?
So this is, I feel like, when people of our age got old enough to remember, it was that thing of remember Home Alone. Like, okay, you didn't really watch it in high school or college probably. And then you get older and go, hey, remember how good Home Alone was? Let's watch that again. And when BuzzFeed was really kind of first proliferating, and that was the kind of listicle type article you were seeing on the internet, one of the main topics out of this movie was always, what does this family do?
Right.
Because you don't realize it when you're a kid, that house is a mansion.
Yeah.
Place is insane. It's a real house in Chicago, which I think, if I remember correctly,
and
sold for like $1.5 million.
Right.
Oh, yeah. They're all, the whole family. Now, to be fair, they do explain in a throwaway bit of dialogue. It's the brother. It's Peter's brother who's flying them out to Paris because he got a new job there. But they're all able to just pack up at Christmas and go. Just get on a plane and go to Paris for Christmas.
Yeah.
Again, gigantic house, tons of people. He, you know, Catherine O'Hara's, Kate, is her name Kate? Her name's Kate.
Yeah.
She literally just like grabs, you know, $120 out of her wallet and gives the pizza guy that without thinking twice about it. It's just, they got a lot of money. So the novelization explains some of that. Kate is meant to be a fashion designer. That's why there's all those mannequins and sewing machines in the basement and the attic, which is also how Kevin gets away with using some of them as that distraction when he creates the shadows behind the curtains, or not distraction, to try to send the guys away. Peter, however, is only described as a quote-unquote successful businessman.
He's a white
There's
guy.
There's no description given to what
He's
it is.
He's a white guy in a
so
suit.
That's what the real answer is now, but there was a very, very popular fan theory that he was in the mob. He was in the mafia. That's what it was.
That's why he recognized the tooth on the floor.
That's why he recognized the tooth. That's why he like doesn't really like to talk about his finances. Like, they're never discussing it. They're just doing what they do. And I love that this was part of the evidence. That is why at the very end, when they all come home and he asks Kevin what he's been doing, Kevin goes, I'm just hanging around. And he says to him, what a funny little guy. They're like, he sounds like he's in the mob. That's some Joe Pesci in the mob shit. It sounds like he's borrowing that from him.
That's too good. I never thought about him as a
awesome.
Basically, like he has some sort of basic business front, but behind the scenes is where he's making his real money. Apparently there was a draft of the film at one point in time. Number one, that had Kelsey Grammer as Uncle Frank. They created that role for him, and the actor who ends up playing him, if you notice, looks an awful lot like Kelsey Grammer around that time.
I believe his father works at a place called Legitimate Business. It's a good story.
Uncle Frank was the real villain of the movie at one point in time in a draft of the film. He was the one who hired Harry and Marv to basically burgle Peter's house. He told them like when they were going to be gone, where to go, where all the valuables were, and the idea was that he would get a cut of it. That's why he's such a dick early in the movie, and then eventually they just cut it down to, well, he's just a dick.
He's just a
dick. We'll just let him be that guy. It was way too much to throw in a final twist of, oh, Uncle Frank was in on it the whole time, too.
I don't even remember Uncle Frank.
That
would have
been a little much.
Yeah.
He was the one being...
He's the one after the pizza is all spilled up and all that, and he goes, look what you did, you little jerk.
Okay, now it's coming back to me. Yeah.
Yep, that's him. Screen debut of one Kieran Culkin, who we love around the PZ85 offices.
Friend of the show.
He's a horsey boy. Yeah, he's doing a lot of good things. Fuller with the Pepsi. I got to find the screenshot. But that screenshot of him across the kitchen with the Pepsi where he just grins at Kevin because they all know that he wets the bed. Brett Wiley, who I've mentioned on this show before, every Christmas, I know he's going to do it anytime soon. He changes his Facebook profile picture for the whole month of December to Fuller holding up that Pepsi and grinning. And it's one of my favorites. It's like a holiday tradition at this point. I got to see if I can find the exact picture somewhere on the internet. There it is. I found it immediately.
Wow.
All I had to do was Google Fuller Pepsi, and it came up instantly. So there's Kieran Culkin and his screen debut.
God, I forgot he looked like that.
Fuller, go easy on the Pepsi.
Is that product placement? God, that's product placement, right?
Oh, yes. 100%. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. The second movie gets even more egregious with it. With I think the pizza that he gets is either Pizza Hut
and
or
the
Domino's.
Talk Boy.
Oh, yeah. The Talk Boy, which they had to invent. That wasn't a thing. They had to invent that and then turn right around and sell it because people wanted it so bad.
I wanted one. I never got one.
Yeah, I had a Yak Back. That was the dollar store version. It worked for about 6 seconds.
I like the term Yak Back. That makes me...
Yeah, and it was spelled... It was no C's. It was Y-A-K-B-A-K.
Oh, yeah, of course. It was
very, very...
I'm looking it up right now. So, Lindsay, we invited you on the show to talk about this film, too. I'm looking at the Yak Back now, and it brings memories.
It just fit in your hand, and the big button, the little button.
So poorly made.
Lindsay, why the hell do you like this movie?
Again, it was just that holiday classic that you, the first time you watch it, it just has a certain charm, and it sucks you in, and then it becomes the yearly watch, whether it's a matter of renting the film or it being on TV, like... It just, I don't know. I just enjoyed it. I liked the music. I liked the story. And it was just an entertaining movie. Like, I can't think of a time when I was younger that I got bored watching this film. Like, it was one of those ones that would keep my attention.
For all the movies that are not So when you look at Christmas movies, right, there's this ever-churning debate of what is a Christmas movie. There are things you don't question at all. It's a Wonderful Life.
Home Alone.
White Christmas. Like, these are movies that are Christmas movies.
Right.
And then there's your Die Hard, your Iron Man Gremlins. 3, your Gremlins. These are movies that take place at Christmas time, but are they Christmas movies?
They are.
A lot of people will tell you yes. Home Alone, I feel like, should instantly get slotted in the latter category, right? Because the premise of the movie is about this kid defending his house from burglars, not about Christmas. But at the same time, it's not. The movie is so inextricably tied to Christmas. It doesn't work if it doesn't take place then.
Right.
The weather situation, the family going on vacation, you could say, oh, it could be, you know, summer vacation instead. Well, technically it could be, but then why is the brother flying them out there? He's flying them out for the holidays.
Holidays,
tons of Kevin's traps are geared around the fact that it's cold weather, that it's icy outside, that it's Christmas. I mean, he has them step on Christmas ornaments, for God's sake.
Right.
The whole way that it's tied into that story. The entire Old Man Marley subplot only works because of Christmas, because he goes to listen to his daughter sing at the church, and he wants to get him back together with his family for the holidays. It's a Christmas movie. I don't think there's any debate in any way, shape, or form that this is definitively a Christmas movie, even if that's not the main point of the plot.
Yeah, but like you said, it's a movie that takes place during Christmas, but without Christmas, it's not the movie. It's not the same. Yeah. See, probably Home Alone 4, 5, 6, and 7, including the new reboot one, which I didn't know was written by Mikey Day.
What?
Oh, really?
I'm sorry.
Man, I forgot they even made a reboot. Ugh.
Yeah, it was supposed to be the big one. It was supposed to be like, this was the thing that's going to bring Home Alone back, and it was almost
universally hated. It went to Disney Plus directly.
Yeah.
Didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And the kid in it, like, because
I didn't even know it was a thing.
Because Macaulay Culkin did so well in this movie, every other Home Alone film is about a child at home alone with whatever. And I think that's the mistake, right, man. You're trying to catch lightning in a bottle. I don't love, this might be a spoiler for like my rating. I'm not super devoted to this film. This has never been, I mean, it was a Christmas favorite when I was younger, but as I grew older, I stopped liking it as much. But even if you don't like this film, which I do like the film, there's no way you can say that Macaulay Culkin wasn't lightning in a bottle for this film. Trying to recreate that time and time again is one, bankrupt creatively. But at the same time, like, you're never going to find another Macaulay Culkin, dude. There's a reason Macaulay Culkin is, like you said, he is the poster child for poster childs.
Child.
He created the term poster child. That was never a term before him. He was the first kid to have eyebrows.
This is,
can I bring that up real quick? Well, after this,
it only worked a second time because, again, they
had still Macaulay Culkin,
exact same people. Mm-hmm. It was still Macaulay Culkin. It was still John Hughes. It was still, I think, Chris Columbus directed the second one as well. Again, it was effectively the exact same cast with some bonus additions of Tim Curry. And the less said about Rob Schneider, the better. But
forgot he was in it.
Oh, yeah. He's the bellboy. He's the one who puts the gum in his fist. I mean, at least he gets shit on throughout the movie, which is
good.
Yeah. It's like you said, it is very much a lightning in a bottle scenario. This movie got a sequel because it made a shit ton of money. In fact, it was right at the cusp of that. This is the way Hollywood works now. From now on, we're making sequels if you make a bunch of money. We don't care how much sense it makes. It worked one time. They got lucky with it the second time because John Hughes was able to go, yeah, I can do this again, but guys, we're
going to
start scraping the barrel very soon. Yeah. And that's, he dips out after that point. And again, basically everybody dips out after that point.
I don't think anyone comes back for the future ones. I mean, they literally.
I don't think 3 got made until the 2000s anyway.
Yeah, 3 was
a while.
It was a very late. It's one of those things that's like, why did you make a sequel to this? I guess they thought, well, enough time has passed. People will forget that Macaulay Culkin was the best thing since sliced bread. And they did not. Hunter, really quick, before we get into our reviews, I need to bring up something that I did not bring up last night when we did our episode on the Terminator.
Is it because I heard you say eyebrows? I know where this is going. Is it Lloyd's of London?
What?
Is it Schwarzenegger getting his eyebrows insured?
I didn't know that. What?
Oh, well, shit. I thought we were talking about the same thing. I'll throw a thing at you.
Well, let me say mine to see if it ties into yours.
Okay.
After the initial fight with the Terminator, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, in the club, yeah. I believe. He goes back and he does the whole thing where he looks, you know, he's in the car and he's chasing him down and he looks at
his eye. And...
Yeah. He has no eyebrows at that point. He is completely eyebrowless. And I still, maybe I missed it. Why does he not have eyebrows suddenly? Did they explain it?
They were singed off in the fire. It didn't catch much of the front of his hair, but yeah, the fire, the explosion, when Reese shoots underneath that car and blows up the car, it singes off the eyebrows. So the behind the scenes story of that is Arnold shaved his actual eyebrows. Like, he literally shaved them off. There's nothing that they put on them. And he was so worried they wouldn't grow back. There's a place called Lloyd's of London.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of wrestlers get involved,
and couldn't wrestle because of that reason. Yeah.
Yep. He had his eyebrows insured because he was so worried they wouldn't grow back. He wanted compensation if they didn't.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a trivia.
It was. I wish I'd thrown it in there. It was in the trivia and I read it and I thought, oh, that's interesting, but it's not, you know, I thought it was interesting, but it's not necessarily about the movie.
That's the same company, and we'll get right back to Home Alone, I promise. That's the same company that would not let Rick Rude wrestle because he was insured through Lloyd's of London that if he got hurt and they thought it was too much of a liability. So they basically kept him to a speaking role because of that. It was, Lloyd's of London, man, they don't play games. Okay. So, with that little random trivia out of the way, let's get to the reviews. Now, of course, if you know the show, you know what we're going to do. But if you don't, let's break down the system. We take the five-point system made famous by someone. And it's two thumbs up means you love it. One thumb up means you like it. One up, one down means you're neutral. One down means you hate it or you dislike it. Two down means you hate it. Or in the case of like Terminator, one thumb up and one thumb hovering in the middle to up position means, man, I really like this movie, but I don't know what Hunter's going to say. So I'm going to keep it, I'm going to keep it basic.
The 4.5.
You'll have to go back and listen to last night's episode. And so will everybody else to understand what we mean. So
I was too busy today. I got tomorrow.
I'm really torn on this film. My natural instinct is to give it one up, one down, because I did like the movie and I liked it a lot as a kid, but as time grew on, I did kind of turn on it to where I didn't like it anymore. And at one point I remember thinking that Macaulay Culkin in this movie and this movie as a whole, the premise, everything else was so preposterous. I was in my whole, oh, that doesn't make sense phase. How does SpongeBob cook underwater? That's stupid phase. And so I turned on this film and at one point I disliked it. But now that I've gotten older and I'm far less interested in what the internet thinks, I kind of rebounded. So I am going to go with one thumb up. I do like this film. I do want to watch it again this Christmas because I haven't seen it in quite a while. And I remember this being, like you said, on the rotation when I was younger. It was this, it was Garfield's Christmas. There were a bunch of things that we watched every year. And I think I was unkind to this film too much in my 20s. Now that I'm in my 60s, I appreciate it a little bit more. So it's going to be a thumb up from me. And I think I recognize more now how important Macaulay Culkin was to the 90s. There was no one bigger, really, which is great coming from a tiny child. What about you, Hunter?
Congratulations for him finally getting his star on the walk.
With Catherine O'Hara.
Yes.
And with Brenda Song, his wife, I had no idea that they were married, by the way. Sarah brought that to my attention. I was like, holy shit, I had no clue.
Yeah, good job, Macaulay.
Catherine O'Hara, who he still calls mom,
which is sweet.
Which is apparently great.
Every time they see each other, he still calls her mom.
It's incredibly sweet.
I'm on a streak at this point, so I'm going to start with it and just put it out there. This is a two thumbs up movie for me.
Wow. Christmas season has opened up his cold, dead heart.
It really has. This was a big movie when I was a kid, but I also I didn't turn on it so much as I just kind of strayed away from it. I don't remember ever watching this in college or even like kind of like shortly after college, but definitely around the time that Sarah and I started living in the same house together, it became a regular. We have a running tradition now of well over 10 years. When we put up our Christmas decorations, put up the Christmas tree, there are Christmas movies on. We usually start with a different one from the previous year, depending on what that was. And then depending on how long it takes, you just kind of keep them running. Home Alone is regularly, I would say the top three that we go to on a regular basis are Christmas Vacation, Home Alone, White Christmas. It's one of those three almost every single time. The only reason it wasn't Home Alone this year, well, the only two. Number one, it was the first movie last year, and number two, because we're going to see the score this weekend. And so we did end up watching it again on Sunday is when I saw it for this particular show. But if there's any movie, and man, I mean, I say this about Ghostbusters, and it's true about that as well. It's true about Tombstone to some degree. But at this point, I've been watching this movie for so long, I really do think I don't really have to watch it to remember pretty much everything that happens in it. From the dialogue to the scenery to what specifically is going on, I've pretty much got all of it down pat at this point. I love this movie, but objectively, I also just think it's a great movie. I think it's really well written. Again, John Hughes goes through and plugs so many holes that could exist in such, again, a ridiculous, an admittedly ridiculous script that it's just, it's that in and of itself is impressive to watch. To watch it play out in a way that you wouldn't anticipate otherwise. Chris Columbus does a great job directing. The whole cast is great. Nobody feels out of place. And to have, for what it's worth, we talked a lot about Macaulay Culkin, but there are a lot of other kid actors in this movie, and none of them are annoying in a way that they're not meant to be.
Right.
I didn't mention it, but the kid who I love the kid at the beginning. So Buzz, the actor for him is terrible. Look that up later.
But I know.
Yeah. But him in the movie, of course, is great. I especially love when he tells the whole old man Marley story, and then the other kid just calls him out. That's stupid. Like, what do you mean mummies? That doesn't make any sense. The kid, the morning that they wake up to go to the airport, and they're all the neighbor kid. So a lot of people don't know the kid that played the neighbor kid, he actually was very close in the running for Kevin. If it hadn't been Macaulay Culkin, it probably would have been him. And so they wanted to give him a great role. But him just sitting there going, does this van have manual transmission? Does it get good gas mileage? Like, he's perfect.
He's my favorite character in the film. Yeah, he was always my favorite. Yeah.
That guy going, geez, kid, I don't know. Not beat it, would you? Like, it's just awesome. Yeah, man. I mean, it's... I talked about this yesterday with the Terminator. I gave the Terminator 2 thumbs up. Spoiler alert. Hopefully you've listened to that before this. Not necessarily because of an emotional connection, but because objectively it's just a great film. It's just right. A really, really well-made film, even if it's not your thing. This one is right in between for me. I recognize that it might not objectively be a perfect movie, but combined with how well it works and my personal feelings on it, I can't give it anything less than that. I wouldn't feel right doing it any other way.
The Grinch, ladies and gentlemen, his heart is beating 13 times the original size. I don't remember.
No, I turned it off. I think I turned it off.
I don't remember how many sizes the Grinch grew down there, up there, in the middle. Three times the size.
Down there.
I don't know. Look.
I don't like that at all.
Well, now you're getting hearts.
I can just make them happen.
Now you're getting hearts.
Yeah, apparently I can just click on them and make them happen. Now that I found out where they are, you just do this.
Oh.
And they're much cleaner than they used to be.
Yeah, happy 4th of July. Just clean them up. Mr. Grinch. Lindsay, what about you?
I am also in the one thumb up boat.
Thank God.
I really love this movie, but I don't watch it every year anymore. Like, I used to when I was younger. Like, as soon as, like, Christmas time rolled around, if it wasn't playing on TV, I'd pick it up on one of our rental evenings. But it's... I don't know. I still like going back to it, but I also don't think I'd be crushed if I could never watch it again.
Like, that's how I am with most films, to be fair.
That memory's there. I enjoy it. I appreciate it for what it is. I still love my John Candy cameo in it because I love that man.
Oh man,
he is the polka
filmed
king.
It all in one day. He filmed the whole thing in one day and almost all of it exclusively made up by him. He was given some vague direction on what to do. And he and Catherine O'Hara had been in this, they were in the same troupe, and I forget what it was. It might have been SCTV.
I think it was SCTV
out of Chicago.
Yeah
and so they knew each other, and so literally Chris Columbus just went, here's basically what I need out of you. You guys figure it out. John Candy also only made $414 for this movie. He agreed to be paid scale because he worked for one day. He later was a little upset about that because he's like, he found out that he made less than the pizza boy in the movie.
Damn. Because
he had fewer lines. Yeah, the pizza boy had more to do overall at the end of it.
I think John Candy
more scenes and had more stuff to do.
I think he did well for himself, though. I think he's...
He was fine.
He did fine after this,
One thumb up for me.
So that's two thumbs up from two of us, two thumbs up from one of us. That's the either way, it's a liked movie. It's a well-liked movie. Yeah. Now the part of the show where we talk about what happens after the credits. And this one is a little strange to me because you have Home Alone 2, which kind of talks about what happens immediately after, and then I think a better representation
is just the next year.
Yeah, well, that's immediate. That's immediately after the year. I think
pretty quickly afterward.
A better representation of what happens to these characters, though, is that Macaulay Culkin short where he has suffered PTSD from being left home alone twice and tried to be murdered twice by crazy guards. We said when we started this show, my initial thought was, what happened to the characters in Evil Dead Rise after this? How do you live with what happened? That kind of boils over to this for me, even though it's not nearly as bloody or gory. No one died. To be an 8-year-old kid home alone, you think your family's gone forever. You're being pursued by these two, even though we see them as bumbling idiots. As a kid, that would still be terrifying to have two grown men trying to break in and get you. And then it happens again the next year. Now you're stuck in a hotel with the same two idiots trying to kill you. So Kevin McAllister, to me, is kind of what this show was made for. What happens to him after the credits? What does he go through? I think that short is precisely what I would want. It shows that he has PTSD. He suffered greatly over this thing we all laughed at. And to a character like that, this must be the most traumatic thing that has ever happened and will ever happen to him. So I think they wrote it for me, personally.
I'm going to piggyback on that because I love this movie. And again, it's one of my Christmas favorites. It's one of my favorite comedies of all time. I want it to just end where it ends. I'm fine with, I like two as well. And I enjoy watching two. For me, I like the first one better than the second one, but I get it. And I'm fine with it picking up there and that just being the next part of their story. But like you said, here's something that kills me when you really think about it, because apparently between the first one and the second one, no one talks to each other, right? At the end of the first movie, remember, the parents and the family don't know what happened.
Yeah.
They have no clue. And Kevin doesn't tell them.
For some reason.
When they ask what happened, what they've been doing, he just says, just hanging around.
Why?
Yeah, he doesn't.
Why would he not tell them?
What went down in that moment. Eventually, they've got to learn, right? The neighbors are going to talk about how their houses were flooded and burgled. It's going to be in the papers that these guys were picked up.
Don't you think the police would have contacted them?
The cops would come do a follow-up.
Yeah. Hey, well, we arrested these guys at your house.
These are the worst cops of all time. When they go to do a wellness check on a kid, they go, nobody answered. Tell them to count their kids again and then leaves. Like, come on, man. That's terrible.
Pretty bad.
So, it's very weird that no one talks in the interim. I am very curious about what happens to Kevin as he grows up. And like you said, I think the short is it's definitely the most interesting version of that. But the movie ends on the little jokey note of Buzz yelling, Kevin, what did you do to my room from upstairs? And Kevin giving the face again. But really, how does he explain any of that? Oh, well, I dicked around and broke all your stuff. And then the time it's going to be, and why is the clothes iron in the basement? And why does it have a man's face imprinted on it?
Where's the tarantula?
Why is there a drain pipe hanging from rope in our living room?
Why is your treehouse completely demolished? Why is it destroyed? And how did this rope get from the attic over to it? Like, there's going to be questions that have to be answered, and sooner or later, someone's going to have to come clean about all of this stuff. And I really want to know what
stuck in tar on our basement steps.
What those characters had to say about those things. That's what I want to know. I don't have answers. I can't explain any of them. I want to know. I want those questions. I want Home Alone 1.5.
The middle ground.
The therapy year.
Yeah. Like, also, at what point are the parents arrested for neglect? When you leave your kid alone twice, year after year.
To be fair, it's Kevin who is the one who mistakenly gets away the second time. He gets on the wrong plane. This is a pre-9/11 New York. Well, I guess he's not in New York when it happens. No, wait. Yeah.
He goes to New York.
Right. He goes to New York. They're at Chicago. They're at O'Hare International. He goes to New York. They go to, is it Florida? They go down to Florida.
Florida and it rained the whole time and they were pissed.
Right. It's random. Yeah. So So yeah. But anyway, yeah, there's definitely a real world version of this where you go, a lot of people drop the ball to make all of this happen.
Yeah. Right? And that's not a comedy, by the way. That's a drama.
Yes.
That's a drama. Yeah,
that one
film.
Takes it a very dark, serious turn.
That is a lot of therapy. I believe Fraser Crane is involved. And it's that's a weird
Hello,
one.
Hello, McAllisters. I'm listening.
Well, no, he's still involved at this point.
Yeah, but they called him. And said, Dr. Crane.
In Seattle.
So we left our kid at home alone accidentally. And when we came back, everything was destroyed. And the cops keep asking us about the two guys that were arrested here. And I don't know what's going on. Our kid won't tell us anything. In fact, he doesn't say anything anymore. He sits in the corner, balled up, crying constantly. What can I do?
Fuck.
Well, listener.
The movie does kind of briefly touch on that, too, because... And it's one of those things where when you love a movie, it feels like every time you watch it, you see like a new thing. Sarah and I talked about this when there are people just like pounding on the door and Kevin's worried about what's going on early on before he kind of gets his like, I have to defend my house. He goes and hides underneath his parents' bed and he's freaked out. And we're both like, oh, man, I don't think I've ever like really thought about how fucking terrifying that would be if you're in that situation. You think things are like all fun and games, and then suddenly you realize, oh no, I can't take care of myself.
I'm
like,
a child.
If someone comes in here, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
It's also what really got me there is the scene transition, because the next time we see him, he's moving stuff out from underneath the bed in front of his face, and that's when he's like, I can't hide under the bed. I can't be scared. But it seems like the daytime has changed. He went under there at night, and the next time that we see him, it looks like it's daylight. Did he sleep under the bed because he was scared? Because that's very sad. That's very sad to me.
Shame on the parents. Shame on the parents for allowing this to happen.
They didn't know. Okay, to be fair, shame on them for sending him up to sleep with Fuller, who wets the bed on the hide of bed in the attic.
Smiling when he drinks that Pepsi. Lindsay, what about you? What do you want to see after the credits? What happens to these characters? What happens to Buzz? And then I'll tell you
like
what happened to Buzz.
My brain went to the immediate after, where Buzz beats the crap out of Kevin, and they start fighting, and then they both get grounded. And in the process of them fighting, then maybe he kind of spills the beans about, yeah, well, I beat two grown men. And they're like, wait, what?
Wow.
But yeah, with the way the parents are, I don't think they would go to therapy. Because, like, when all the kids are around, they're so distracted about everything. Like, I don't think they would have time to make appointments and go get it taken care of, that they would just brush it under the bed and continue to be bad parents.
Oh, no, no. I was more thinking about, I decided to look up the thing about the actor that played
Buzz. What's his name? Devin Raytray?
Raytray, yeah. Or Rat Ray. I guess you call him Rat Ray.
Rat Ray.
Which sounds like something Scooby-Doo would say, Rat Ray. Anyway,
he's just got to get out of that rat race.
So I'm a little surprised by this. I did know about the domestic violence and rape allegations, not to get too serious on the show. Yep. I knew about that. I did not know that in 2007, did you know about this? A documentary film crew followed Rat Ray's attempts to win the heart of U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. He used love discs, which were love letters set to music and images, to serenade her, and traveled from New York to Alabama, Palo Alto, and Washington, D.C. to court her. The resulting film, Courting Condi, was due for international release in fall of 2008.
What the hell?
What? Wow. Well...
And on that note...
And that's the end. Okay. Fuck us. I want to stop doing this show. I'm tired of learning these things about people. Anywho.
I'm now burdened with knowledge.
That's going to wrap it up for us tonight on Condoleezza Rice and Epilogues. But we will be back in a couple days with another episode. Myself and Lord Farmer William Hills Esquire. We'll talk about the Godzilla Minus One movie. Now, if you haven't seen that one, it's a relatively new one. That's going to be spoiler heavy. You'll have plenty of warning on there. But that's not it for us this week. Outside of that film, Lindsay might be there too. Who knows? We did two nights ago. We did Terminator. Last night, we just wrapped up The Curse of Strahd. Big thanks to Cody Sandusky for leading us through the end of our journey there. 'Twas a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And
yes, it was.
And you'll be surprised by the ending, I think. Some characters came back.
Yeah.
there was a big surprise. Now, Tamari, on an all-new After Dark, now that we're done with Nostalgic November, and I forgot to change the graphics, I apologize, I will do that tomorrow. We are going to be talking about our music wrap-up for the year, and according to everyone that talked, it's going to be a big show. We're going to have Lindsay, myself, Double H, Jesse, probably Shelby, potentially Kaz, maybe Cody, probably Tanner. There could be like 8 people on that show, which, yeah, if there is, Kaz will immediately back out, right? Like he has said before, he hates when there's 9 people. Yeah.
I'm not going to stay there.
So we'll see what happens.
I've also decided I'm just going to do my Reddit recap. My music one's not that interesting. I'm just going to do my Reddit recap.
Neither is Lindsay's.
Okay. Yeah, mine. I was disappointed by mine because I didn't think I listened to it that much, but my top 5 are all from the same album.
Yeah, it's not the exact same joke, but it's basically Dylon, 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 and Dylon because he spits hot fire.
Well, I mean,
fire.
If they spit hot fire, yeah, what are you supposed to do? Am I still... Am I still the only one that doesn't use Spotify? Is everyone else on Spotify except for me?
Probably.
Yes. But that just makes you
that
special.
Blows my mind.
That just makes you special.
I guess. I get different metrics than you guys is the only thing. I get different they pull different like statistics.
Well, so we have an AI DJ now that for this year.
It's true.
I'll turn it on and it's like, I'm gonna start you off with your number 2 from last year. It's thrice. I don't know why he sounds like that, but he does. Anyway.
I haven't heard if my DJ is the same or not, but I don't like Shannon's DJ. That's
your DJ
sure.
is going to be the same voice, but it's going to be like, all right, so we got your top 5 here, and goddamn, girl, don't you have any kind of differing tastes?
Well.
Anyway, that's tomorrow on an all-new After Dark. Until then, hey, until later this week with Godzilla Minus One, the balcony is closed. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow for AD.